Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigga. Glad to have you all with us today. We obviously have a lot to talk about. I want to give you a quick update. You've heard Drew Dawson just a minute ago on our newscast talk about the awful plane crash, the plane going down near the Savannah airport, closing down Highway 21, Crossgate Road. We now have five dead, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and the Associated Press. I believe that's the entire crew of the plane, based on the earlier reports we had of how many people would have been flying that aircraft. So obviously, George Public Broadcasting will be staying on top of that story and have updates as we move into All Things Considered later today. Let me introduce our panel and go right to work on the top political stories. Greg Bluestein, the political reporter, the lead political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is here. He is on Wednesdays typically here, and we're glad you could be here today, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
You were out last night with a candidate we're going to spend some time talking to. Yes, a gubernatorial candidate.
Hunter Hill on Tuesday, Stacey Abrams on Monday. We're getting to crunch time, so about every day I'll be seeing one of the seven leading candidates.
All right, we will be talking about that shortly. Dr. Andre Gillespie, political science professor at Emory University. Thank you for being with us today, Andre.
Thank you.
Sam Olens, he is the former attorney general of the state of Georgia. Prior to that, he was a longtime commission chair of Cobb County, and now is practicing law with Denton Sam, the world's largest law firm.
I know all of them. Thank you.
And it's a real pleasure to have Mike Thurman. Michael Thurman is the CEO of DeKalb County, former state labor commissioner, candidate in 2010 for the United States Senate, and in his previous life, a member of the Georgia legislature from Athens. Have I got that all right?
You got it right, Bill. Great being back.
It's good to have you here. Let's start talking. The governor is got basically 7+ days. He's got to dispose of, in one form or another, all of the legislation that's been passed by May 8th. And so he's really in the final stages of taking action on a number of bills that have still are still sitting on his desk. Greg, he signed the budget today, $26.3 million budget.
Billion.
Billion. Yeah, $26.3 billion budget. Yep.
Yeah, and the biggest takeaway from this budget is it also is the first time that state government has fully funded the Quality Basic Education Act formula, which is the K-12 formula, since at least 2002, and by some counts, even longer back, further back than then. And it was a big deal. He was praised by Democrats and Republicans, even his former opponent, Jason Carter, in 2014, who ran a campaign pledging to increase school funding, said you got to give it to the governor for adding that funding in there. It also took away a big issue for Democrats who'd hoped to campaign on this in the 2018 general election cycle, that the Republicans hadn't effectively funded K through 12 education, took that issue away from them.
Mike Thurman, it is obviously a positive note that the governor has fully funded QBE for the first time in a number of years. There are those skeptics who say, yes, but it's been a long time coming, and the schools are still struggling to catch up with all the money that they lost over the years. Yeah.
Yes, but speaking as a former superintendent, I applaud the governor for making this very important reinvestment in public education. I was on the phone last night with the superintendent of Clayton County, Dr. Beasley, and he shared with me that he would not have been able to balance his budget but for the full funding of QBE. And just to dovetail on what Greg is saying, as a lifelong loyal Democrat, I tip my hat to Nathan Deal for the outstanding job, not just on this budget, but as he moves to the end of his administration, and the polling shows it, he's done an admirable job. I don't and didn't agree with all of his decisions, but if you look at the entire body of work, Bill, he's been an outstanding governor, Republican or Democrat, here in the state of Georgia.
I should point out that one of the credentials I did not mention of yours is that you were the acting superintendent of the DeKalb County school system at a time when that system was in crisis, and you came in, and your job was to fix it And Andre Gillespie, by many accounts, he kind of did a decent job over there.
Well, with the help of Governor Deal, if I may, Andre, before you step in, Governor Deal was a partner in helping us to get the DeKalb School District turned around. So I think Mrs. Deal, who's a lifelong educator, has done her work in helping the governor understand the value of public education.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to sort of look at this as a turning point. It's going to take years for us to see what the impact of this funding is going to be. And so there's a nice kind of natural experiment here about what education metrics look like now versus what they're going to look like in a couple of years. So for me, I'm going to wait to see what happens. But I think any amount of money that you're putting towards educating young people and investing in children is a good thing.
All right. As we get started on our conversation, let me remind you that you can watch us. You don't have to just listen. You can watch us on Facebook Live. Just go to the GPB News Facebook page. And you'll be able to see that it's the two elected officials who or former elected officials who are wearing neckties, not the rest of us. But Sam Olin's the other thing in that budget.
We resemble that remark.
Yes, we do.
$100 million in borrowing for unspecified transit projects. We're going to talk in a minute about, in fact, we can talk about it now. We expect tomorrow the governor's going to sign the transit bill that creates a new authority to oversee how transit will be built out in primarily in the Metro Atlanta area. Yes?
Absolutely. And I think that's great news for the region. I mean, let's face it. Getting around the region is tough. We all need more transit. I personally would like to see an extension of the MARTA line at Perimeter Mall to the Galleria area. I think it's long past time for Cobb to have that station there. I think we also need to give a lot of credit not only to the transportation chairs in the State House and the State Senate, but also, frankly, Chris Tomlinson. He's done a really nice job leading GRETA and CERTA, along with
GRETA's the Georgia Regional Transit Authority,
and CERTA's the state regional.
Okay, go ahead.
And and candidly, also to the outgoing head of MARTA, who really made a huge difference, along with Robbie Ash, who's done a fantastic job as chair of the MARTA board.
Mike Thurman, as the CEO of DeKalb County, you've been a part of MARTA forever. I mean, you were one of the founding counties in MARTA, and for years, your county has watched as very few other players out there wanted to be a part of an expansion of the MARTA system. But it appears a new day has dawned in that respect.
Yes, we're proud to have been a pioneer in mass transit in suburban Metro Atlanta. And we're delighted to see the movement in the General Assembly. Sam mentioned Chris Tomlinson, the chairs in the House and the Senate, Brandon Beach, Chairman Tanner, but there are others who have worked over the years. When I first met you, Bill, back in the 80s, when I was in the legislature, MARTA was the epitome of a bad word in the General Assembly, that no one, particularly on the Republican side, would even consider supporting MARTA. But when the Speaker of the House, during the Eggs and Issues breakfast last January, stood before 1,000 business leaders and said, "Look, I support mass transit," we knew that something different was happening. Now, the question is for DeKalb County is that we hope that our friends in the regional, at the state and local level, don't forget the one that brought them to the dance. You know, we're proud of the fact that we've been there investing over $100 million a year in MARTA, but we have some real issues in DeKalb, particularly in South DeKalb and Central DeKalb, with the expansion of services, bus and rail, and particularly Stonecrest.
So the question I have about this is, who's not going to buy into this? Yeah. And so, you know, not everybody is completely on board with this, I think to their detriment in the long run. So the thing that I'm fascinated by, and the thing that I think I'll be watching and studying, is who backs out and why. So we'll see with the referendum.
Greg?
Yeah, and what the commissioner is saying, to expand on that, this paves the way for 13 Metro Atlanta counties to do their own sales tax, which could lead to maybe Cobb, maybe Gwinnett, maybe some other suburban areas to do this. But at the same time, there are major questions about expansions, not just to Stonecrest, but also to Emory. What happens with the Beltline? You know, these were all early adopters, we could say, about transit. So, you know, does MARTA kind of turn its back, or does MARTA, you know, go with the ones who brought them to the dance, or do they embrace the newcomers?
So Andra points out that, you know, the question is going to be who gets involved up in Cobb County, Sam, your territory. There are many people in the northern end of the county that don't want much to do with any kind of public transit, we think. And you've had to do some dancing to try to create a situation in which the people down in the Cumberland area have some opportunity to see a tax that would work to their benefit down there. Yeah.
So two things. First, as a proud Emory Law alum, folks better start talking about transit to that Emory area. It's a huge job base and traffic. It's about as bad as it can be there.
Clifton Road is in my community, and it is not fun.
Go ahead. And maybe why it's now part of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Secondly, the polling, and I've seen some recent studies actually from Cobb DOT, the vast majority of Cobb citizens want transit. I think the question is whether the elected officials are on the same page as the overall population of Cobb County.
So here's my question. I mean, it's not just Cobb County. There are parts of North Fulton that have also expressed resistance
Johns
to this.
Johns Creek, for one.
Yeah. And so my question is, you really like being on 75 during rush hour, or do you like being on 400 in rush hour? I at one point used to take piano lessons in Alpharetta, and I would take them late afternoon because that was the time I could do it for work. When it took me 2 hours to get home. Right? Well, that made me not want to take piano lessons.
Well, to that point, it's still a question at the local level, but without Charlotte Nash, the chair of Gwinnett County's government, I don't think we would really be at this point. She really did a great job, and the yeoman's work, really, leading that effort, Sam.
The CEO is 100% correct. She was the mature adult in the room that was pushing it for the whole region, and I think that, you know, when she was the CFO, when she was the county administrator, she didn't get the credit that was due her for her leadership in Gwinnett County.
That's true.
And this is just another example of how much we will miss the chairwoman when she decides to finally retire.
We're seeing it overall, more Republicans embrace transit as part of an economic development incentive. You saw NCR move its headquarters from suburban Gwinnett County to Midtown. You're seeing more of those pushes, other Fortune 500 companies and other major players like Mercedes, which it's located its North America headquarters near the Sandy Springs, MARTA line, State Farm in Dunwoody. So you're seeing that, and so that's attracting more Republican support. But what transit advocates still don't have is a dedicated stream of revenue for transit. You have the $100 million in bonds, and you had $75 million in bonds in 2015, but it's going to be up to the next governor. And you're hearing most of the candidates say warm things about transit, although there's very few guaranteed promises. They're saying that they're going to look at every option they have on the table and double or increase transportation funding in some cases. But there's very few, especially Republicans, who are open to a dedicated stream of funding revenue for transit so far.
Well, maybe the press, maybe the Atlanta Journal, could do an article on where most of these economic development projects are going in the region. Because it's my understanding that those counties that don't have transit and aren't immediately looking to institute transit are not being viewed by many of these major opportunities.
And DeKalb would be the perfect model to look at. You see the growth in Dunwoody, Avondale, Doraville, Shamley, all around or near transit stations.
Yeah,
and go ahead. That's just a fact.
I was just going to point out that for people who are not watching us on Facebook Live, you are not wearing an Amazon-branded shirt today, Mike Thurman, even though I think I just heard a pitch for Amazon in what you said
Absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely. We love to have Amazon, of course, everyone else. And let me mention Kensington, too. So, but, you know, Bill, one of the things I like to say
it's
to
not an election year.
Yeah.
Well, Amazon would be nice in DeKalb County out in Doraville, actually, come to think of. But one of the things we don't do enough is we don't recognize the leaders who 50 years ago in DeKalb and who embraced MARTA. The growth you see today is because 50 years ago we had leaders who rose above partisanship and race and other things and actually embraced mass transit. And that's one of the things Bob Bell, State Senator Bob Bell, Clark Harrison, names that we don't hear a lot about, made a tremendously prescient decision to embrace MARTA when everyone else said no.
All right. You can tweet us to join this conversation at Politics GPB, just like Kay Schmooze just did. I lived in Gwinnett, Kay Schmooze says, from 84 to 2010, coming from New York City. The lack of cohesive transit blew my mind. Also, always amazed at how many Gwinnett County tags are parked in MARTA lots. So we get that. But, you know, Andre, you know, we have a big listenership outside of Metro Atlanta, which I'm glad we do. But they're sort of left it. They're left out of this picture almost entirely right now. Well, Bluestein, you tell me I'm wrong.
Well, remember, a lot of the bond money in 15 and the bond money too went to Athens, went to more Columbus, and went to Savannah. So it went to bus systems, but they're left out of the sort of, you know, train subway conversation.
Well, and they're completely left out of the conversation that many have wanted, which is some sort of a system, some sort of fast train that will connect Savannah, Macon, Atlanta. That's just not gone anywhere.
Well, just because it hasn't gone anywhere now doesn't mean that it won't go anywhere soon. And if this model proves to be a model of success, I think that there could actually be a case to be made for trying to expand the system statewide so that you can get pretty easily from different parts of the state to the next.
All right. Well, we'll watch and see how that develops under the next governor.
I'm still waiting for the brain train from Atlanta to Athens.
Yeah, that's right.
The native Athenian, we've been waiting a while.
Emory Moore.
I've been waiting for that one my entire life. I grew up in Athens.
All right. Just in passing, we'll point out the governor has plans to sign, he may have by now or already done it, the distracted driving bill, so you won't be able to hold your cell phone once that law takes effect while you're driving your car. You're going to have some sort of hands-free device. But here's the big question. And Mike, let me start with you because, and Sam Olens, you'll want to weigh in on this, of course. The Eagles Landing Stockbridge bill is still out there. The governor has not signed it. He's sort of indicated he's ambivalent about it right now. But before we, so Greg, this bill is controversial because it's the first time in the state of Georgia a portion of a city is kind of deciding to sever itself from the city in which it's existed and create a new municipal entity.
Yeah, critics say that's the unprecedented part of it. It would sort of cannibalize a part of Stockbridge to create this new Eagles Landing. And at the same point, raising questions about how Stockbridge and its $14 million plus in bonds are affected by this because they're taking a pretty wealthy, affluent part of Stockbridge and creating this new city.
All right, so that said, Sam, Mike, what do we think about this unprecedented effort? Are we all going to next year be sitting here talking about the city of Buckhead?
Let's go back to the basics first. If I play lawyer, I think there's two sets of issues with that bill. Number one is legal/constitutional, and number two is political. On the legal, you've got a really strong impairment clause argument with regard to those $14 million in bonds. And you're already seeing the bond market nervous. And one has to wonder why there wasn't wording in that bill that specifically spoke to the outstanding bonds that belong to Stockbridge. Secondly, political. Not only do you have the issue about a potential city of Buckhead or, you know, many other opportunities there, from a racial perspective, it looks terrible. You're creating an affluent white where it's now pretty close white black. You are opening up clearly a potential Section 2 voting rights argument. You're going to have the ACLU. You're going to have the NAACP. You're going to have a lot of litigation and commentary that isn't favorable commentary to our state if this bill is signed.
I would hope. I pray that Governor Deal, who's developed, I think, a reputation for fairness and justice and equity with his criminal justice reform, the fully funding of public education, I think this will be one of the most significant decisions he makes. I'm hopeful that he will veto this legislation. It is nothing more than a Pandora's box. The Attorney General said it correctly. And it will go to the courts. It won't be implemented. And we will spend years creating a divisive environment fighting over this legislation.
Yeah, the racial implications of this
just
are
horrible.
Kind of staggering.
Yes.
And I, Andre, I have asked around this table for weeks now, how this bill got the momentum that it found to be passed by this General Assembly. And I, no one has given me a particularly strong answer. I know you're not following the General Assembly day in and day out, but I'm troubled by the fact that they moved on this without thinking about some of the issues that first Sam Olens raised.
I mean, it's really helpful to hear that perspective about sort of the technical reasons why this might be a problem. But I put this in the larger context of the incorporation of towns that we've seen happen, you know, in the last 15 years. And my working hypothesis is that those are racially motivated. So even mm-hmm. though those were unincorporated areas that were incorporating into towns and cities, you know, it's not mistaken on me that where this has happened, you know, most frequently in DeKalb and in Fulton counties has been in places where African-Americans have held senior leadership positions in the town, I mean, in the county. And so that maybe this was being used to kind of buttress sort of, you know, that type of descriptive representation. And so from a normative standpoint, it is interesting, I will say. From a research standpoint, it's been something that I've been fascinated with and kind of observing from the sidelines. So regardless of what happens with the outcome of this, I think that there are some really fruitful research projects that can come from this.
Greg, you follow the governor very closely. Has there been any update? I think the most recent comments I've heard him make about this, he's basically suggested he's not sure where he's headed
with
this.
Yeah, and I asked him about today up in Ackworth where I saw him at an event. He still wouldn't tip his hand. This is not his bill, though. This is nothing. This has never been his priority. This is a local legislation that he didn't even kind of – he only got caught up to speed on it a couple weeks ago doing bill vetting period. And I think, you know, if he were to veto this next week, he doesn't have to get into the racial demographic arguments. If he does veto, he's likely just to go into he's jealously guarded the state's AAA bond rating, and he can just cite that, say, you know, I don't want to do anything that could jeopardize that. This is why I'm vetoing, and it can be a fiscal argument that would also sate some of his conservative supporters.
All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dig into some new commercials in the governor's race on the Republican side. Today we'll discuss with our panel. But right now, let's get a break out of the way. You're listening to Political Rewind.
If you recently supported GPB during our spring fund drive, thank you. We're already putting your dollars to work to bring you the programs that you've come to expect and enjoy from GPB. If you didn't get a chance to donate during the drive, your online contribution now will still make a difference. Please take a couple of minutes to go to our website, gpb.org, and click the green donate button at the top of the page. And thanks so much for your generous support of Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I've got a couple of other tweets at Politics GPB to share with you. Richard Boder says, gotta love Mr. Thurman. He never takes his DeKalb booster hat off. Also love Political Rewind, the only time we get honest, decent debate on both sides of issues. I appreciate your saying that. Here's a personal note, and most of us at this table know him. Tim Eccles sent us a tweet, and here's what he says. Maybe my latest campaign worker, just born this morning to my oldest daughter. Mom and dad doing well at hospital. He'll be ready to walk in 2022 for my reelection. Welcome, Caden James Truax. So, Public Service Commissioner Tim Eccles, mazel tov on welcoming a new grandchild into your family. All right, let's talk governor's race. So, Brian Kemp has now got a spot on the air running for, yes?
Oh, keep on going.
Oh, I thought you raised your hand. I know.
She wants first dibs.
She wants first dibs on this. I got it. So Kemp's running, of course, as a Republican candidate for governor. The other day, he put a spot on the air that I think is self-explanatory just in listening. But in case it's not, he is sitting in what is clearly a living room, two big armchairs. He's on the left side of the screen as you're looking at your TV. And a young man, maybe late teens, is sitting to his right. Brian Kemp is holding a shotgun in his lap. And at first, that shotgun is not in a position to be fired. It's open. But as the commercial goes on, he puts the gun into place where he could fire it and seems to point it at the teenage boy. And this is what's said throughout that commercial.
I'm Brian Kemp. This is Jake, young man interested in one of my daughters.
Yes, sir.
Jake asked why I was running for governor. I said, one,
cap government spending.
Two,
take a chainsaw to regulations.
Three,
make Georgia number one for small business.
And two things if you're going to date one of my daughters.
Respect.
And?
a healthy appreciation for the Second Amendment, sir.
We're going to get along just fine.
Brian Kemp for governor.
All right, Andra, you called first comments.
So I saw this on Sunday morning for the first time and like literally like sat up in bed and my jaw dropped because I just could not believe that he would do this. I mean, I already knew that, you know, Brian Kemp was a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, and there's certainly a way to convey that in a healthy way. But, you know, given the debates that we have about guns and just it just read me the wrong way. And sort of as a disclosure, my great-grandfather had five daughters, and he apparently chased guys off of the property with guns. So they had a circular driveway, and apparently you would come up, and he'd have the gun, and then they would drive around the house, and then they would drive back. Somehow they all managed to get married. But, yeah, it just struck me as just really inappropriate, given the debate about guns. Some people could argue that it's sexist, because he wouldn't do that to a girl trying to date a son if he'd had one of those. And so, yeah, just so much about this just rang really, really tone deaf. I know he was trying to be kind of homespun and funny and kind of populist about it. And I'm sure some people read it that way. But there are other people who were, I was just shocked. I was gobsmacked when I saw
that. Sam, he's running to win the Republican nomination for a governor and not to win the votes of Democrats at this point. And I would bet you there are a lot of Republican voters out there who think this is a funny spot and makes a good point.
You know, when I ran last statewide 4 years ago, it was $650,000 a week for 1,000 basis points, which is the standard.
How much time you can buy on a TV station.
And he's putting $1 million behind this ad, by the way.
Okay. Right. But thanks to everyone on the left complaining about it, it's giving him $5 million worth of time. So by definition, people keep playing it just as you just did. And whether you like the commercial or not the commercial, he's getting more press attention for this than he could afford.
Well, I've got to tell you, Sam, I ran into Brian Kemp here at about 4:45 this morning. He was in the building. We rent space to the Fox News Network, the news channel, and he was in because they wanted him on the air to talk about this commercial. And Greg, I'll come to you after we play for you a little bit of what Brian Kemp said on Fox News early this morning.
Well, it's been interesting. It's driving the liberal media crazy, but I've been on the road literally all over our great state of Georgia since Friday when the ad started airing. And people are just, they love that. You know, they think it's funny. They know it shows my love for my girls and my family and my appreciation and strong support for the Second Amendment. And people are like, don't back down. Keep this up. I'm like, there's no way we're doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to encourage people to share the ad and get our message out.
So, Greg, he seems to feel Sam Olens is right. He's getting a lot of bounce out of this commercial, and we're partly to blame.
And really loving, it seems, the attacks he's got. Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, others have attacked him. It also speaks broadly to the GOP a further, tighter embrace of Second Amendment. And we had a poll, the AJC had a poll that came out last week that showed a growing number of Republicans are okay with tighter gun restrictions, but the Republican primary electorate base is still so ardently pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights expansions. We're now not only seeing this from Kemp, we have Casey Cagle talking about constitutional carry, his support for constitutional carry. We have a lieutenant governor candidate challenging a rival to a duel. We have Hunter Hill airing ads at firing ranges and trumpeting his rating from the NRA. So we're seeing this up and down the Republican ticket because it's such a big primary issue.
So Mike and Andra, let me let each of you weigh in on this question. If it's true, and the AJC poll shows it, that more and more Georgians, regardless of party, are beginning to think that there ought to be some new gun regulations passed by Congress. And if it's true that perhaps Georgia is more purple than it's been ever before in recent history, maybe this commercial serves Kemp well in the primaries, but is it possible that as he, Cagle, Hunter Hill, any of the GOP candidates for governor continue to embrace guns so enthusiastically, they're going to pay a price for it at the polls in the general election?
All that you say is true, Bill, but having run 6 statewide elections, if you don't win the primary, it doesn't matter. I mean, let's just,
well,
it's just pure, crass, electioneering politics. I disagree with the ad. but I celebrate the strategy. The one person who dislikes the ad is not liberal Democrats, it's Hunter Hill. And this ad is about getting into the runoff against Kasich Cagle. And you are willing, if you sitting there almost tired, the last poll I saw that he and Hunter Hill were dead heat. He has his entire political career, at least in this election season, is riding on whether or not this ad works.
You know, there was a funny introduction on the Fox News Channel. They showed the poll that AJC and WSB released, and they said Kasich Cagle sitting at 41% and coming in right behind at 10% is Brian Kemp. That says an awful lot in and of itself, Andre.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's gotten attention, and I think that Mr. Thurman is right. This, you know, he's doing this to try to get attention and to try to get himself into the runoff election. You do have to think about what the general election looks like afterwards, and will this come off as too extreme in a general election? Now, yeah, you know, despite people's willingness for more gun control, we still pretty much view the state as a pro-gun state. So I think the question then becomes, what are suburban white women going to think about that ad? Like, is that the type of thing that offends their sensibilities? Do people, I mean, I know people joke all the time about sort of like using guns to protect their daughters on dates. But it's a question of, okay, so is it in good taste to actually put that in a television ad? And I think some people might think that that's a little bit of a bridge gone too far. I mean, especially when you have a former NFL player who did actually have a handgun in a picture of his daughter and her prom date, and he gets roundly criticized for that. I just think that, you know, while it was funny, you do have to think about what the other optics are. And I think that, you know, long term, that might be problematic for him if he makes it to the general.
Sam Olens, it strikes me that in some ways you are really a living example of what being running in a primary is conservatively as you feel comfortable doing it, and then having to come back and win a general. When you first ran for AG, your first statewide race after being Cobb County chair, you're more than welcome to disagree with what I'm about to say, but there are many people who said, gee, Sam Olens has always been such a moderate kind of Republican. To win this Republican primary, he's moved far to the right. He's embracing positions he might not otherwise have embraced. It didn't hurt you in winning a general.
You know, my two opponents in the Republican primary thought I was way too moderate. So it's a function of where one stands.
I get that.
You know, the comment I was going to make, though, and maybe Greg can jump in, although it's your show, is I don't feel energy from the electorate for a big turnout. So when you look at all these commercials, when you look at all the talk, the press may be jazzed up about it. But I'm not convinced that we're going to see long lines.
I did a story on this in Monday's AJC. I went to Newton County, which is one of the most split counties. It's a swingy county. And I went to the Democratic meeting and the Republican meeting on the same night. And I heard the same exact things from organizers of both parties, which is there's no energy about this race. They're worried that everyone thinks the race is in November. They don't realize it's in a couple weeks. So I think we're going to see pretty low turnout, it looks like. But also, to Andre's point earlier, the runoff, I mean, runoffs are always kind of anyone's, it's a crapshoot. We might have turnout of 10%. And that's why even with Hunter Hill or Brian Kemp at 10% in the primary, they still think they can pull it off, because it will be about their most fervent supporters showing up in a July runoff in the thick of the summer to vote for their candidate.
Okay, let me play a different commercial. Hunter Hill, who many people, Mike, you said really Brian Kemp's job is to become go get into second place to pass
it's
Hunter
like
Hill.
It's like a joke where the two men ran into a bear in the woods, and the guy said, well, let's outrun him. And the guy said, well, you can't outrun the bear. He said, no, I just have to outrun you.
Right.
You have to get to the runoff.
Thank you, Mr. Thurman. Appreciate that joke. Let's listen to Hunter Hill's spot. So Brian Kemp's trying to get into the runoff by promoting guns. Hunter Hill has already done that, as Greg Bluestein pointed out. But now he's got a spot out which approaches this in a whole different way.
Army Ranger training made Hunter Hill a leader. But during three combat tours of duty, it was Christ who strengthened him.
Make us be sharp when we're in the gun and behind the wheel. And give us the strength to use our abilities to help train this A&P. In Christ's name, amen.
Let's roll.
As governor, Hunter will protect Christian values, defend our Second Amendment, and eliminate the income tax. Leader, fighter, Christian. Hunter Hill, the true conservative for governor.
Greg, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, because you've been following politics for a long time, too. That is the most direct and blatant appeal to the Christian right, the evangelical right, I have ever seen any candidate in a race in Georgia take on. And I can't help but wonder if Trump's embrace of the Christian right is giving Hunter Hill some thoughts about how important that voting bloc can be.
And that also echoes his direct mail, his tour, his campaign bus says Christian conservative on it. I talked to some Republican operatives from rival campaigns who say, at least one said, that's the best ad of the Republican cycle so far, in their
Why?
View.
Why do they think it's
because
the best ad?
Because it hits the Christian, religious liberty type audience. It talks about his tax cuts, pro-Second Amendment, and his military background all in 30 seconds. Reminds voters of his combat duty, which the only other candidate with that sort of credentials, Clay Tippins, who's falling a little bit farther behind in the polls. So it hits those main basic points while also giving him sort of the conservative outsider appeal.
Well, let me give each of you a chance to weigh in this. You want to go?
So that ad would definitely be impactful if Ted Cruz were president of the United States, because I think it fits that line. With white evangelicals' embrace of Donald Trump. So as an evangelical of color, most evangelicals of color not on the Trump train for lots of different reasons. A lot of them weren't Republicans to begin with, and then there are those racism problems. It's really hard to figure out what exactly is motivating white evangelicals. So part of it could be economic policies. Some of it could sadly be racial resentment. A lot of it looks like it based on sort of the new empirical work that's been coming out. And some of this could be they're just going to go with the winner. And so I'm not necessarily convinced that Hunter Hill making sort of his commitment to Christ known is necessarily going to take or take voters away from some of the other candidates if some of those other candidates are perceived to be more viable.
Sam?
Oh, I was happy to have others talk. As the person, I think once again, consistent with what Greg said earlier, this is all about turnout. And Hunter clearly believes this will help his turnout. I think that there's a lot of people that think he's doing something very smart.
You know, Mike, I mean, I've acknowledged for a long time I happen to be Jewish, and there are some ways in which I look at this spot and I'm like, oh, my goodness. But Sam Olin's point is really an awfully good one. I mean, as I said again, this is a very strong appeal to evangelicals to get out and vote for Hunter Hill. And in fact, that may be very effective in that respect.
And I look at it a little bit differently, thinking long-term, primary plus November. I think the lack of enthusiasm should be very troubling to Republican leaders. I can see a lack of enthusiasm among moderate Republicans and conservative Democrats for these candidates. And it may, in fact, be a result of the Trump effect. Whether or not and how it impacts the primary is one thing. I think it bodes well for the correct if Democrats can actually get the game together in November, because a part of the ruling majority or the voting majority has been those conservative, hardcore Republican voters, whether it's the evangelicals or the Second Amendment types. But in order to win in Georgia, which is why Sam Olin can win, is that you have to have a broader tent. And I believe that in recent events, I'm seeing a lack or a lessening of support between moderate Republicans and independent conservative Democrats who have been voting Republican in the last four or five statewide elections.
You know, Greg, it's interesting. Mike has made the same point essentially about not only Hunter Hill's commercial, but also Brian Kemp's commercial, suggesting they are laying the groundwork to move forward in the Republican primary. But they may be creating problems among voters out there who are more moderate and will vote in the general election.
Yeah, I mean, from my standpoint, the only candidate in the Republican side that's still kind of keeping one eye on the general is Cagle, because he's in such a strong position in the polls. But you're seeing him not moving further to the, not getting out, letting himself get outflanked, I should say, on abortion, on some of these issues like tax cuts. He's not going to Hunter Hill's position on eliminating the income tax. He's not going to Michael Williams or Brian Kemp's position on the toughest abortion laws in the nation because he's keeping that general election sort of one eye. He's still taking conservative positions that Democrats are going to be furious with, but just not as conservative as some of his opponents.
And his commercials are, they're issue-oriented.
Very sunny.
Yeah, they're very, very positive, which is interesting. We do not have a tight contest here that forces him to go negative on any of his opponents. He's in a very comfortable position moving into the last couple weeks of the campaign, isn't he, Sam Owens?
So while his team doesn't want to acknowledge they can possibly avoid a runoff, if the 2, 3, and 4 keep yelling at each other, he could actually surprise folks and avoid a runoff.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch how that
remember,
unfolds.
Remember, Tippins hitting Hill doesn't necessarily help Tippins. It could help, you know, Kemper or Cagle.
In this show, we're spending more time with Republican candidates. Of course, we often, on Monday, we took more time with the Democrats. I do want to make one point about the Democratic candidate, Stacey Abrams. On this show Monday, we spent a good amount of time talking about reports that revealed that back in 2015, when there was an off-year reapportionment, 17 legislative districts that were redrawn, to the advantage of Republicans and corralling Democratic voters into narrower districts where they could not have an influence on those Republican districts that were redrawn, the reports were that Stacey Abrams, Greg, had been complicit, had worked with Republicans and accepted that those lines should be drawn to protect those African Americans in her own legislative caucus. Now, she has talked to the AJC, I think she talked to your colleague Jim Galloway, and said, to be honest, I think I was bamboozled. I think Republicans misled me on what they wanted to do, and I got caught up in that. Yeah?
Yeah, she says the GOP chair of the redistricting committee, you know, she was led to believe that it would not be an impactful, these were just minor redrawings. And as a result, the House caucus, you know, the Democrats, well, it was unanimous. It was a unanimous House vote in favor of these changes, including Stacey Evans. What Stacey Evans' allies are saying, is, including several allies who were in the legislature at the time, is that they didn't know how deeply these impacted, especially these two districts. One, I think, was Stockbridge-based, and one is Gwinnett-based, that would move minority voters out of these vulnerable Republican districts, Republican-held districts, and make them less competitive for Democrats to flip.
Mike, we got to do this very quickly, but in her to support her to some extent in this, if you look at that bill, I think it was at 566, it is nothing more than a listing of numbers. Legislative numbers, of district numbers. There is no way to see exactly what that bill was going to do.
Absolutely. I chaired the Legislative Black Caucus during the 90 reapportionment. There's no way to follow the mechanizations and the complexities of a reapportionment plan of that magnitude. I'm skeptical about criticizing her too much in that regard.
All right, we should point out that Vincent Fort wasn't happy with that, and the other day he endorsed her opponent, Stacey Evans, for governor. All right, we are really late in getting to our second break in the show, so let's do that right now and come back with more on Political Rewind.
From Morning Edition and On Second Thought to Fresh Air and All Things Considered, listener support makes everything you hear on GPB possible. If we didn't hear from you during our spring fund drive, your contribution now will still make a difference. Please take just a couple of minutes to support the programs you rely on and enjoy on GPB. And do your part now at whatever level is right for you. Go to gpb.org and click donate. And thanks so much for your support of Georgia Public Broadcasting.
On the next Fresh Air, the white power and paramilitary movements in America. We talk with Kathleen Ballou about her new book, Bring the War Home, which traces these movements from the 70s through the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995. She writes about their vision of a white state, their declarations of war against the government, and preparations for the apocalypse. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
We're back on Political Rewind with Dr. Andra Gillespie, Mike Thurman, the Democratic CEO of DeKalb County, Sam Owens, former Republican Attorney General, former Cobb County chairman, and now an attorney with Denton's, Greg Bluestein from the AJC. Mike, As we were going into the break, you said, are we going to talk a little bit more about the Democrats? I'll tell you what. Yes, why don't we? What would you like to talk about?
I'm beginning to see a tightening in the Democratic primary, to be quite honest with you. And Stacey Evans' media campaign, I think, is beginning to have impact. You mentioned Vincent Fort, the consummate grassroots campaigner, has endorsed Stacey Evans. And in the next few days, you will hear other prominent African-American leaders around the state voice their support for Stacey Evans. Clearly, Stacey Abrams has the inside track. She's well-known, very smart, very accomplished. But do not underestimate a write-all Stacey Evans at this point.
Really? Greg?
I mean, I checked in with all the campaigns. I checked in with the Evans campaign today. They're very confident of where their numbers are. They're still spending more on media than the Abrams campaign. They've got their second of three planned ads out. They're all very sunny. Well, I don't want to say sunny, but they're introductory ads. They're not hitting Abrams. They're more emphasizing Evans' background. We're seeing a dichotomy. We said another national piece focusing mostly on Stacey Abrams out today. This one in the New York, I think it's New York Magazine. So we're seeing a lot of national attention on Abrams. She's still raising most of her money. I think it was 67% at the last count from national sources from outside of the state of Georgia. Evans is still kind of quietly running her campaign. And I'm with the CEO. This is our poll showed 52% of Democrats were still undecided. Of those that decided, Abrams is leading Evans 33-15. But it's still one of these late breaking races. So the next few weeks could really determine it.
You know what, though? So I hear all this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Andre, it strikes me that what Stacey Abrams has going for her, that may be the turning point for her, she has history on her side. Her entire campaign is built around a very powerful notion that Georgia could elect the first African-American female governor. And it just strikes me that message in and of itself is a powerful motivator for people to turn out and vote.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting, and I live in Stacey's old district, is
which Stacey?
Abrams. And it is one of the things that's really interesting is I've been surprised at how bold they've been about putting that forward. If this had been 10 years ago, you wouldn't have seen people running so explicitly on race and gender because people, you know, shied away from that because they thought that it would actually be demobilizing, particularly for non-African-American voters. I think Abrams still has the advantage because the demographics of the Democratic electorate are probably going to go more heavily in their favor. And even despite the defections of prominent black elites to the Evans camp, I think that there could be a case to be made for African-American voters supporting this historic African-American candidate.
And this was not to say that there are not issue-oriented reasons you might choose Stacey Abrams over Stacey Evans, but that on top of it, anything else is a powerful motivator.
I mean, one of the things that I've talked about with other people is that they're very similar on lots of different issues, so it's hard to make that type of choice. So I think since Stacey Abrams has spent years trying to cultivate new voters, if her organizations have done a good job of doing that, then that should manifest itself in the GOTV operation. And then you're going to sort of see sort of who had the better field operation based on what the results of that May 22nd primary
look
like.
Sam, do you believe this state remains red enough that regardless of which Stacey wins the Democratic nomination, Republicans are much more likely to once again capture the governor's mansion in the fall?
I think they're more likely, but I also think Stacey Evans has the greater opportunity to go after suburban vote and to win a November election than Stacey Abrams. And part of the reason I say that is because Stacey Abrams has openly gone so progressive. You know, when you sit there and you have a fundraiser at George Soros's kids' house and you proudly talk about that really puts you totally in that progressive camp, and it's hard to then come forward in November saying, I want to support everyone.
Well, I mean, I think the reason why she's doing that is that Democratic candidates in the past, speaking of 2014 in particular,
it's all the way back.
Have
yes.
been risk averse. And so, and it hasn't paid off. And so what she's testing is, can I do better by just being who I am? Right. And does that authenticity actually garner more support? And so it would be an interesting test to see.
Oh, yeah. And by running as a progressive, or as a liberal. I mean, you know, Jason Carter, you know, we've mentioned this before, but ran as an NRA Democrat. He had distinctions with Deal on a few major issues, but you know, on many, he agreed with the governor. And you've seen that from Democrats for a very long time, with Democrats kind of moving toward the center. And that's why, as much as Republicans say, they'd rather face Abrams than Evans. Abrams, if she's the nominee, would be an uncharted territory for Democrats, at least in the past few decades.
Including this Democrat, who in every statewide race and other race I ran, I always ran as a moderate, / almost moving to the right in November. You had to go left, then right in a Democratic primary and then a general election. So what Stacey Abrams is doing is unprecedented. It's what Greg is saying. She's creating a new test to see how or if a Democrat can be successful. It's a challenge, knowing what I know about Georgia politics. The one thing I do know is that not only will she be the first woman, African-American, she'll be the first liberal, Republican or Democrat.
But, you know, one difference, right, Michael, from your experience is more and more of the vote is Metro Atlanta.
Yes.
So the need to get votes outside the metro areas is less than it was 5 or 10 years ago.
That's true.
So once again, a lot of it is turnout.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and the other big thing to see is, I just want to see how well, if Stacey Abrams gets the nomination, how well she does among white voters. Because I would argue that in 2014, the bar was set pretty low, right? And so the idea that she would get 15% of the white vote, I mean, yeah, if it turns out that that's the case, then I think people will go back to more centrist Democratic candidates going forward. But even if she loses, if she gets 28% of the white vote, then that is a verification of her strategy, and perhaps a strategy that could be used in the future.
One of our Facebook viewers asked us to point out that Kamala Harris, the Democratic senator from California, endorsed Stacey Abrams. And that's an interesting endorsement, because many people think that she is going to be a candidate for a president in 2020.
And she also has Senator Cory Booker.
Cory Booker, another who's been down here campaigning on her behalf. We are just about completely out of time. I do have enough time to say, excuse me, Sam Burnham tweets us, the good thing is now the primary is almost here. I do know which Stacey goes with which last name. Good, Sam. I'm glad we're helping you understand it. Thank you very much to Sam Olens, to Michael Thurman, to Greg Bluestein, and Andra Gillespie. This is a great panel today, and anytime you all want to come back and be on the same show, you are welcome to do just that. We're going to be back on Friday. We didn't have time to get to the story about the Pew Research study that I mentioned in the beginning of the show. It's really a fascinating study. I'm tabling it for today. We do want to talk about it on Friday when we have another terrific panel. Teresa Tomlinson, Democratic mayor of Columbus. Rusty Paul, Republican mayor of Sandy Springs, will be here. And they'll be great people to talk about that study, too. So that's it for us for today. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you for another Political Rewind Friday at 2:00.